Catch a Hint by USS Gender Prize, read by CookieMom6067. They had been ordered to help the new Vulcan colony often enough that the new orders didn't surprise Jim when he received them. The only unusual part was that they were to pick up a Vulcan delegation along the way. Jim didn't much like diplomatic missions, and he especially didn't like feeling like a taxi driver whenever they were forced to take on passengers. Vulcans were fine, though. They tended to keep to themselves and didn't make any unreasonable requests, especially since the destruction of their planet. They picked them up on Starbase 16. Jim had donned his dress uniform for the occasion, and so had Bones, though not without a considerable amount of grumbling. Spock chose to come greet them in Vulcan robes, which was within his right, of course. Jim smiled at Spock as he approached, his robes blowing, the fabric shifting beautifully. Spock was always beautiful. The blue uniform complemented his eyes, and his dress uniform fit him spectacularly well, but there was something about seeing him out of uniform and in his element, which was very enticing. "Good morning, Mr. Spock," Jim said cheerfully. "Excited to see some of your own people?" "Excitement is a human emotion," Spock said, but he didn't deny it. Jim's smile grew. The Vulcan delegation consisted of 6 people, 3 men and 3 women, returning from a diplomatic talks on Andor. Jim greeted them with the ta'al and the ritual words, though he didn't tone down his smile. He let Spock show them to the guest quarters while he walked back to his own room to get changed into the standard uniform so he could resume his shift on the bridge, but not before he heard Spock exchange a few words in Vulcan with one of the women. It had been a very long time since he heard someone speak Vulcan. He tested out of Vulcan at the academy, and as it was well known that all Vulcans spoke standard, they didn't rehash it in the linguistics club. He had little use of Vulcan, and even less opportunities to practice, as he didn't think that he and Spock were close enough yet to exchange words in the Vulcan's native language. There was a lot of baggage that came with languages. Jim knew that better than anyone. Jim invited the Vulcans to the officers' mess for dinner. It was just courtesy, but he wanted to show off the wide selection of Vulcan cuisine available in the food synthesizers and the skill of their onboard chef. Most of all, he wanted to make them feel at home. He invited Spock to join, of course, but made sure he wouldn't take it as an order. He didn't. In fact, Spock didn't show up at all. Jim attempted making small talk with the Vulcan he had seen him talk to before, but didn't manage to learn if they had known each other before or what it was they talked about when he last saw them. He didn't want to appear rude, so he didn't push and didn't ask any personal questions. He would have to spend another 8 days with these Vulcans, and he didn't want things to be awkward, even if Vulcans didn't admit to feeling awkward. Despite not getting the information he wanted, dinner was good. The food was delicious, though he still couldn't find the appeal of plomeek soup, and conversation flowed well. He found the head of the delegation, Ambassador Sokal, to have some very interesting philosophical ideas that Jim greatly enjoyed debating with him. Jim didn't see Spock until dinner the next day, where he was talking to the same Vulcan woman. Jim had learned her name was T'Pring, in quiet Vulcan in a corner of the mess hall. "Are you eavesdropping?" Uhura dropped her tray in front of Jim, cutting off his line of sight to the 2 Vulcans. "What makes you say that?" Jim asked, looking around to see if anyone else had noticed him staring. "Oh, I don't know," Uhura mused. "Maybe the way you keep making love eyes at our lovely first officer." "I'm not trying to steal your man," Jim said, instantly on the defensive, and Uhura smirked. She was fully aware of his little crush on Spock. In fact, she was the first to learn about it, caught him looking one too many times, then cornered him and wouldn't let him go until he confessed. And man, that woman was stronger than she looked. She wasn't mad at him, didn't even warn him to stay away, and barely even reacted when he joked about joining them for a threesome. If anything, she was wonderfully accepting and sympathetic. If she wasn't taken, and he wasn't so thoroughly smitten, he would have thought that they might have worked out as a couple. "Is he pining again?" Bones' voice broke him out of his thoughts, and he jumped. I'm not pining, Jim whined. I never pine. Bones had been the second to learn of his crush, if only because he was the only one Jim allowed himself to get absolutely trashed around, and he wasn't exactly in control of his tongue when he was that drunk. Of course, Bones acted like he already knew, like it was obvious, like everyone on the bridge already knew, too. He's definitely pining, Uhura replied. He's been staring at Spock for like 5 minutes. I'm just curious, all right? It looks like they know each other. That's because they do, dumbass, Bones grumbled. Most Vulcans know each other, especially now that there are so few of them left. They went from 7 degrees of separation to 3 in like a month. Yeah, but it looks like they've known each other longer than that. Have you been eavesdropping, Kirk? Uhura asked, this time genuinely. They're too far away to hear properly, Jim whined. Uhura and Bones rolled their eyes in tandem. Jim thought they were going way too hard on him. He needed to find some new friends. Hey, Spock, Jim caught up with him between shifts. I haven't seen you in a while. You saw me yesterday evening, Spock said, raising an eyebrow. Jim tried not to be both embarrassed and a little bit hopeful at the knowledge that Spock had noticed him looking, despite being engrossed in conversation. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm used to seeing you on the bridge during meals and then also privately. You haven't been overworking yourself in the labs, right? I have not. While I have spent my on-duty time in the labs, as Lieutenant Martin has begun a new project, which requires my supervision for the first section, I have been spending my free time with the Vulcan delegation. I'm glad you're getting along, Jim said. One of them is a childhood acquaintance of mine, Spock said without prompting, which Jim would usually take as a sign that he was becoming more comfortable around him, but that now he took to mean Spock was interested in talking about this acquaintance. Yeah? Indeed. T'Pring and I have much to get caught up on. Sounds like you were more than acquaintances, Jim said, hoping he didn't sound as bitter as he felt. He was never this jealous of Uhura. Is it because Vulcans don't have friends? Vulcans do not have friends. Spock raised an eyebrow condescendingly. However, you are correct. T'Pring and I were more than acquaintances. However, we were not friends by human standards either. We spent our younger years attempting to distance ourselves from one another. Now, with Vulcans being an endangered species, we can no longer afford to ignore one another. Jim waited for Spock to say something more, but it looked like he was done. Jim wasn't sure what he could ask to incentivize Spock to give up more information without closing up, so he offered a game of chess over dinner instead. The Vulcan delegation was very interested in Jim and Spock's game of chess. They watched the first round with curious eyes, and by the second round, Chekov had managed to open a betting pool, which they were eagerly participating in. Jim wasn't sure how to feel about being the winning bet, let alone being bet on by Vulcans. No one who wasn't there to see it would believe him afterwards. They played 3 more rounds, and the results were perfectly balanced. 1 win for Jim, 1 win for Spock, and 1 stalemate. Despite the game being over, the Vulcans seemed to decide to make the whole evening into an event, as the young Sank brought out a lyre and began playing Vulcan folk songs. Jim hummed along as the other Vulcans joined in, and a bit of a crowd had formed. While it wasn't too out of the ordinary to see Spock playing his own lyre in the rec room, seeing a whole group of Vulcans burst into song was quite unusual indeed, and made for a spectacular sight. The evening just kept getting weirder and weirder. Eventually, the party died down and everyone returned to their quarters. But Jim was still drunk off adrenaline and had lost a few of his inhibitions when he asked Spock to play again the next evening. Luckily, he didn't make a fool of himself, and Spock accepted. He saw them again over lunch. This time, Jim was sitting close enough to properly hear the words exchanged between Spock and T'Pring. Despite not having practiced Vulcan, let alone heard native speakers for a very long time, Jim had little trouble keeping up. That would not be an issue, T'Pring said in her melodic voice. Even if you could look past it, I do not believe that I would be able to, Spock replied. his soft tenor curling around the syllables in an almost erotic way. Jim could listen to him speaking Vulcan all day. "You give yourself too little credit, Spock. You are not aware of the depth of the emotion." Now that made Jim really intrigued. "We would not be discussing this if our race wasn't dying, but we are not in a situation where we can afford to be picky. If Stahn had survived the fall of Vulcan, your opinion would be different. This conversation does not concern him." T'Pring's voice had turned cold, but he doubted any non-Vulcan speaker would have noticed. It really was wonderful practice. "Are you eavesdropping again?" Uhura sat down in front of Jim, blocking his line of sight once more. "Fuck you, it was just getting interesting," Jim whined. "Since when do you speak Vulcan, anyway?" "Since forever, now shut up." He tried to look behind her without being too obvious, but she moved and blocked his view again. "You're being an asshole," she said. "They're talking in Vulcan specifically so that no one will be able to understand them. If they didn't want people to listen, why aren't they talking in a more private place?" Jim retorted. "Maybe it's because if they do, they'll start throwing punches," McCoy joined them. "I don't think I've seen Spock so angry since that time he throttled you, Jim." "Why do you keep ganging up on me?" Jim moped.
Because you're an idiot,
they said at the same time, then high-fived each other. "I desperately need new friends," Jim muttered. He tried looking behind Uhura again, but Spock and T'Pring were already gone. Hearing Vulcan again brought back a lot of memories. The house was fairly new, but the decorations were antiques, things she had picked up along her travels. She had long since retired, and there was nothing quite like a mild, weathered colony planet to spend the rest of her days in. He was just a child, no older than 13, but he had seen so much already, too much. She was the first person to treat him like a child, and yet with dignity. She saw his potential and his passion, and lit a fire in his mind that sought to consume all she could offer. He knew it wasn't his fault when the house burned down with her inside, but Jim still woke up with the taste of ash in his mouth and a deep ache in his gut. Bones was the first to notice, as he always was. He didn't say anything as he shot Jim with the supplement hypospray on the bridge, and Jim barely flinched as he did. It wasn't unusual for the doctor to attack while Jim was unsuspecting, so no one commented on it. Jim still made it to the mess hall for lunch, despite knowing he wasn't going to eat anything. It wouldn't do to worry his crew needlessly over something that would pass soon enough, and besides, he wanted to see if Spock and T'Pring showed up again. They weren't there when Jim arrived, but Uhura cornered him before he could leave. "Are you okay?" she asked. "Yeah, why wouldn't I be?" "You don't look okay," she said, placing a comforting hand on his bicep, gently forcing him to sit down. "Is this about Spock?" "I'm fine, Uhura. Just a bad night's sleep, that's all." Before she could reply, Bones joined them and Jim groaned. "Seriously, do you go everywhere together just so you can gang up on me?" "Only during lunch," Bones said, taking a bite of his meal. "You're not going to eat anything?" Bones knew his moods almost better than Jim himself, so he knew the lighthearted tone was just a cover. "I'm going now," Jim announced, rising, just as Spock finally entered the room. He wasn't with T'Pring this time, instead joined by two others from the group. He made eye contact with Jim and nodded in greeting, but followed the other two to a different table. They were also speaking in Vulcan, but the conversation was civil and polite, no sign of them being prior acquaintances. So Jim ignored his urge to listen in again and simply left the room. They were 2 days away from the colony when Jim actually managed to overhear an entire conversation between Spock and T'Pring without being interrupted by anyone. Spock was sitting in the rec room alone, reading reports. Jim walked in because he liked being seen relaxing among his crew. He felt it made him look more approachable. He didn't want to interrupt Spock, so he decided to sit a little ways away with his own pad, though he was reading a book. "Spock." Jim looked up at the same time as Spock at the sound of T'Pring's voice. "T'Pring," Spock said, and Jim's eyes followed the movement of his lips. "I thought we agreed that there was no use in discussing this any longer." T'Pring sat down in front of him, and Jim tried to lean towards them discreetly. "I wish to know your reasoning," she said. "I have explained it to you. You have made excuses. I do not understand the logic in placing your affection for a human above the needs of your people. The needs of the many outweighed the needs of the few, and emotions are not even needs. I have already told you that there is a 68.4% chance that I am infertile," Spock said, "which leaves a 31.6% chance that you are not. While not likely, that is still a notable chance and should not be ignored. Even if we find that you are infertile, I could acquire a donation. However, the child would still require another parental figure to form a familial bond with. I have grown up with a familial bond with someone who did not wish to father me," Spock said, and Jim flinched. "I do not wish to inflict that on another." "A human could not satisfy your Ponfar," T'Pring said, and Spock almost looked affronted. "That is not true," Spock said. "My mother cared for my father during his Ponfar and suffered little ill effects. While a potential lack of mental compatibility resulting from the low human psi rating could cause a prolonged Ponfar, it is something I am prepared to suffer through. Also, it is possible that I will not go through Ponfar at all due to my hybrid nature." "But if you do, and you are far from New Vulcan and from me, and your human rejects you, we cannot afford any more loss of life." Jim couldn't imagine Uhura ever rejecting Spock, even though he didn't know what this Ponfar was. He was getting a clearer idea of what T'Pring had been to Spock, though. He knew of the Vulcan custom of bonding his children, and from the previous conversation he'd listened in on, he could extrapolate that Spock and T'Pring had been bonded like that. But T'Pring found another suitor who had died with Vulcan, and she now fell back on her first option, only to find that Spock had also moved on. "I would be of no use to New Vulcan, even if I were to survive rejection," Spock said solemnly. "We are T'Hyla. A rejected bond of that magnitude would surely demolish my sanity." T'Pring stared at him, her eyes wide in a comically human expression, which Jim couldn't help but mimic. He couldn't imagine being so in love with someone that being rejected by them could cause something like that. But T'Pring's reaction made it clear that she could. What Spock said was true and backed by factual evidence. "I apologize for my insensitivity," T'Pring said, her voice softened by an emotion that Jim couldn't quite place. "It is of no consequence," Spock said. "May I ask who it is?" Jim looked down at his book. He almost didn't want to hear Spock's answer. He knew how much it would hurt. He missed Spock looking over at him. T'Pring nodded in understanding and got up silently. Jim only looked up again at the quiet sound of the rec room door opening and closing for her. The world was gold around him, glittering and shimmering, swimming amongst the deep dark blue shining and winking at him, like floating in space without a bodysuit, nothing but the great expanse drawing him out, sucking him into a black hole, slow, and then speeding up, and then suddenly stuck. There was a film of dust on the road, like fresh fallen snow, but when he breathed it in, it coated his lungs instead of melting, filling them, growing, eating at them until he was forced to cough it up, white amanitas falling whole from his mouth like destructive angels. He startled awake with a dry mouth and a throat sore from screaming. Bless the necessarily thick bulkheads for doubling as great noise cancellers. He skipped breakfast again, and Bones stuck him with another hypo. But when he skipped lunch too, the doctor decided to pay him a personal visit. "I thought you didn't make house calls," Jim said, as he stepped aside to let Bones into his quarters. "Only the best for you, princess," Bones teased. "You've skipped four meals in 1 week. What's up?" Jim sighed. "Nightmares." "Anything in particular?" "The usual." They sat down on the couch. "They start nice, but by the end I'm choking on smoke, or spores, or gas." "Was there a particular trigger for it?" Bones lifted his tricorder and began scanning Jim in a manner that shouldn't have been as familiar as it was. "I learned Vulcan there. I think hearing it so much has brought it on. It'll probably go away once we drop the delegation off. Bones hummed. Well, your melatonin levels are a little low, and so is your serotonin, but it's still not far enough for me to start offering any treatment other than a cup of coffee in the morning, and maybe trying to catch a nap in the afternoon. Try tuckering yourself out during the day. See if you can sleep through them. That never works for me, Jim said. At least we're on a well-known route, so I don't have to be on my best, as much as I hate admitting it. I never thought I'd live to see the day where you admitted you can afford to be vulnerable, Bones said, putting away his medical tricorder. Honestly, now I kind of wish I didn't. Jim smiled self-deprecatingly, and Bones patted him on the shoulder before leaving the room. Jim and Spock beamed down to the colony with the Vulcan delegation, along with a few engineers and medical staff. The planet was hot and dry, only slightly cooler on average than the Vulcan that was, a little smaller and less massive, with a gravity closer to Earth normal. Nothing that would cause the Vulcans any issues. Bones still stuck the entire landing party, except for Spock, with Triox, because while the other conditions may have been a bit more comfortable to humans, the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere was still too low for any amount of physical exercise, and they were there to haul boxes and fix machinery. Spock had disappeared almost as soon as they landed, most likely going to visit his father, and Jim quickly got sucked into helping the colonists and his engineers, so they didn't see each other for the rest of the day, until Ambassador Sarek himself invited Jim to dinner. Jim couldn't deny the Vulcan ambassador, of course, so he agreed and followed him to his new home, where Spock was already waiting, his face downcast. "Samek," Spock said in Vulcan, "this is not necessary." "It is, my son," Sarek replied, and Jim looked between them. Clearly he was missing some crucial piece of information. "It is not yet necessary for him to know." "You should not wait," Sarek chided. "I am not he, no matter how similar our genetic material is, and this is not the same universe. This Jim is not the same as his." "Maybe I shouldn't be here for this," Jim said in standard, his Vulcan too rusty to risk offending one of them. "How about I join you tomorrow once you finish this?" "That will not be necessary," Spock said coolly. "You have been brought here under false pretenses." "I was just invited to dinner?" Spock blinked. Then his expression softened, becoming almost sheepish. "I apologize. Of course you are welcome to join us for our evening meal." He gave his father a look, then led Jim to the dining room. Jim had never seen Sarek's house on Vulcan that was, but this house gave him an idea of what it must have been like. It was big, made of vast open spaces and carved stone. Of course none of the furniture had made it, but Jim could easily imagine the antiques and other beautiful things that must have filled the space. Who knew even Vulcans could be vain? Sarek served their dinner, bowls of something that reminded Jim of curry, spicy rice, and vegetables. The meal began in silence, but then Spock spoke to Sarek and Vulcan again. "You should not have invited him here," Spock said. "It was not your place to do so." "How long will you wait, my son?" Sarek replied. "Tell your Tahila." There was that word again. He had never been taught it, but after Spock and T'Pring's conversation, he gathered enough context to know what it meant. "Cease meddling in my private affairs, father." Jim almost flinched at the clear anger in Spock's voice. "I will tell when I am ready, when I am certain I will not be rejected." "Control yourself, Spock." Spock visibly cringed at his father's words. "Where's the logic in waiting? The answer is certain to be yes. Your Tahila is confident, compassionate, capable, by all accounts, a perfect mate. Why do you hesitate?" "How many times must I ask you to cease?" Spock almost rose from his chair and Jim shrunk in on himself. "Maybe I should go," he squeaked. "You should have this conversation in private. I'll see you around." Without waiting for a reply, he practically fled from the room. The moment he was out of the house, he asked to be beamed back to the ship. It was getting pretty late, anyway. Jim didn't expect to run into anyone on his way back to his quarters, but he literally bumped into Uhura as she was coming out of her own room. "Sorry," he said. "Didn't look where I was going." "Captain," she stopped him before he could continue rushing down the corridor. "Are you okay?" He sighed and weighed his options. Spock's gonna propose to you, he said. What? He says he's not ready yet, but everyone is pushing him to do it soon. What you have is really special. He couldn't meet her eyes. Didn't want her to hear the pain in his voice. Kirk, what are you talking about? Spock and I aren't even together. What? This made him look up. Yeah, she said, desperate to make him understand. We're queer platonic. I thought you knew that. We love each other a lot, and we kiss and stuff sometimes, but we're both gay. We're not in a romantic relationship. You, what? You mean I've been pining this whole time when I could have been tapping that? That's completely on you, Uhura laughed. I thought I made it pretty clear that I didn't have a problem with you making a move on him. I thought you were just messing with me. Jim groaned and leaned back against the wall. Fuck. Wait. So who's the person he's going to bond with or whatever? I think you should ask him that, Uhura smirked. Anyway, I'm going to be late for my date, so if you don't mind, I'm afraid I'm going to have to miss the rest of your meltdown. Jim watched her walk down the hallway and sighed. He had missed his chance because of some stupid assumption he had made ages ago. And now Spock was so incredibly in love with someone else, and he didn't even know who. Jim was not expecting to get a call from T'Pring 2 hours before they were set to leave orbit, asking him for a private meeting. He agreed, of course, and spent the next 15 minutes while she beamed up and made her way to briefing room 2, pacing anxiously. Captain Kirk, she said upon entering, and he realized he had barely heard her speak standard before. Lady T'Pring, he greeted in return, I come to serve. Your service honors me. She tilted one eyebrow, in mild surprise, not expecting him to know that old greeting. I have come to discuss a personal matter pertaining to your first officer, Spock. Okay, Jim said cautiously, gesturing for her to sit before sitting down himself. You are his friend, is that correct? I'd like to think so, yes. As his friend, you would make sure that he comes to no harm. What's this about? Jim asked, desperate to cut to the chase. He had never known a Vulcan to beat around the bush, but there was a first time for everything. It is not my place to say if Spock has elected not to tell you. I ask that you answer my question. Yes. I always do everything I can to make sure he stays out of harm. Unfortunately, he has this nasty habit of taking bullets for me. Is there anything Spock could do or say that would make you care for him less? Well, if I found out he's a serial killer, Jim chuckled nervously. Then again, I don't think he could ever do something like that. No, I don't think there's anything that could ever change my regard for him. T'Pring nodded. If he were dying, and you could save his life at great personal cost to yourself, would you? I would die for him, Jim said, before he could stop himself. T'Pring seemed satisfied, but Jim was having a harder time reading her than he did Spock. Perhaps you should tell him that, she said. Without waiting for his reply, she left the room, and 2 minutes later, he was notified that she had beamed back down to the planet. First Sarek, now T'Pring. The Vulcans around him were starting to act like they were setting up a Shaduk, not to mention Uhura, who didn't even say or do anything particularly out of the ordinary. But Jim still got the feeling that she was laughing at him over something. And Spock. Spock hadn't been ignoring him, per se, but he hadn't gone out of his way to spend time with Jim, like he normally did, on a more relaxed mission. Jim could chalk it up to Spock spending time on the planet with other Vulcans, especially his dad, but Jim still saw him around the ship, and Spock didn't even try to make small talk. Maybe Jim should tell Spock how much he cares about him, even just platonically, even if Spock had his eye on someone else. Jim didn't want to lose his friendship. Spock hit the door chime right at 2000, just as Jim had asked, and Jim led him into a room, set to their usual compromised temperature, dressed in his civvies, a light gray shirt that he knew complemented his eyes, and blue jeans that were especially tight around the ass. Spock surprised him by wearing civvies himself, once more in a Vulcan robe, though this one appeared considerably more modern, short-hemmed and paired with slacks, all black except for dark purple piping around the edges and silver calligraphy down the front. Jim smiled warmly at him as he let him in. "Good evening, Spock," he said, leading them over to the couch instead of their usual spot at the desk on either side of the chessboard. "How did you enjoy your time on New Vulcan? I haven't seen you around for a while."
"You saw me earlier today," Spock said.
"Yes, but that doesn't count. I meant off-duty."
"Indeed, my stay on New Vulcan was adequate. I appreciated the climate."
"What about the people? Must have been nice to be around Vulcans again." Jim wasn't sure in which direction to lead the conversation. He didn't want to push too far too fast, and he didn't want the conversation to fizzle out like small talk tended to do with Spock.
"I had thought they would be more accepting after what has happened, but my father is as demanding as ever, and the others still look down at me. It is not logical."
There was a hint of bitterness in his voice, and Jim was surprised that he gave up that information without prodding. Spock must have really needed to get that off his chest.
"I'm sorry," Jim said.
"It is not your fault. In fact, you have been very kind to me. Thanks to you, the Enterprise is more of a home to me than Vulcan ever was, than New Vulcan could ever be. I thank you."
"God, Spock, that... thank you."
Jim didn't know what to say. He placed a hand on Spock's shoulder and squeezed gently. Now was as good a time as ever.
"You mean a lot to me, Spock. Space has always been my dream, but without you, well, I would have died 100 times over.
He let out a self-deprecating laugh. "I appreciate all that you've done for me. I need you to know that you can always come to me with anything you need."
"I understand, Jim."
Spock placed his own hand over Jim's, and a flash of something passed through them, like a mild electric shock. Jim gasped.
"Jim," Spock started, "there is something I must tell you."
"Go ahead."
"Here it comes, the rejection. He's going to tell me who he's so enamored with."
"I..." Jim has never known Spock to hesitate with his words. He never started speaking without knowing exactly what he was going to say. Then he switched to Vulcan.
"You are my Tahila, my son, the only love I could ever know. I cherish thee."
Jim stared at him wide-eyed.
"I apologize," Spock said. "I find that I cannot say it in standard."
"I love you too," Jim said in a rush. And this time it was Spock's turn to stare, his eyebrows almost at his hairline.
"You speak Vulcan."
Spock was beginning to blush, and Jim couldn't help but smile fondly at the green tinging the tips of his ears.
"Yeah.
How?"
Jim looked down and cleared his throat. If they were going to do this, Spock needed to know.
"When I was 13, I got into a lot of trouble, and my stepdad shipped me out to spend a year with my aunt and uncle on a new colony planet, hoping it might break me down a little, make me more manageable." Jim smiled bitterly.
"It was nice, at first. There was an old lady down the road from our house who spoke over 100 languages, and I was bored enough to start climbing the walls out there, so I begged her to teach me some. So she did. She taught me Vulcan and Klingon, and a little bit of Romulan and Orion and Zindi."
"She sounds like a very intelligent woman," Spock said.
"She was. There was very little left after the fire, but I managed to salvage some manuscripts and bury them before the butchers came. I dug them up once the rescue ships arrived, got them published. Actually, I believe you used one of them in your advanced Vulcan class, Uhura told me."
"Hoshi Sato," Spock whispered reverently. "You were taught by Hoshi Sato."
"Yeah."
Penny in the air.
"You were on Tarsus."
And a penny dropped.
Jim nodded. He couldn't bear to look at Spock, didn't want to see the pity on his face.
"Jim, I grieve with thee."
Jim nodded and swallowed around the lump in his throat. He didn't expect to be engulfed by strong arms and a warm hug. Had never thought Spock would want to hold him like this. He let out a sob, and then he sobbed some more. Soon there were tears streaming down his face in rivers as he held on to Spock and cried, and cried, and cried. He wasn't sure how much time had passed before he finally stopped, his breath still hitching and uneven.
"Jim," Spock cooed,
Jim, Ashaya, it is all right. I am here. Jim sniffled and slowly drew back, wiping his eyes. Thank you, he mumbled. Jim, Spock said softly. And despite how much Spock was using it, Jim didn't think he could ever grow tired of it. If you know Vulcan, why have you not said anything? You overheard many of my conversations about you. I didn't know you were talking about me, Jim said sheepishly. Honestly, I thought it was all about Uhura. Nyota and I are not in a romantic relationship. She had explained to me that queer platonic relationships are not uncommon among humans. As such, I believed it would be obvious that that is all we are. Well, from the outside, a lot of times it's hard to tell the difference, Jim said, especially if you don't want to. Frankly, I was scared. I still am. I've never loved anyone like I love you, and that terrifies me. I don't want to go too far, and I don't want to hurt you, and I don't want to get hurt myself, and all of this builds up. I heard how you explained your feelings to T'Pring, and frankly, that terrifies me. I'm terrified of ever doing something wrong, making you think that maybe I don't care for you or something, and then you'll go and lose your mind, and I'm scared that I also feel the same way about you, and that maybe you'll eventually decide that I'm not good enough for you, because God knows you're everything anyone could ever hope for, and I've been through so much that I wouldn't hold it against you if you thought I was broken. And then if you decide to leave me, I think I might just lose my mind, too. I could never leave you, Spock said, cupping Jim's face in his hands and looking deep into his eyes. And you could never hurt me. If you were capable of causing me harm, I would not have fallen so deeply for you.
That's how I feel about you, Jim whispered. But I just can't believe that any of this is real.
I can show you, Spock said. And Jim nodded. And then Jim was floating out in space with no suit on, swimming through the great ocean of the universe, stars bobbing on the waves around him. He was a halo of gold, just one of billions of stars, but the sky engulfed him, brightening his light with its shadow.
You are everything to me, my sun, my Tahila.
My sky, my moon, my stars, I cherish thee. The end.